You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Malcolm Holine, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations, Turkey. The vote in Turkey is imminent. Erdogan has been in power for more than two decades, the president of Turkey, a very powerful player, not only in Asia Minor, in the region, but also in the globe, because he's a member of NATO, and the Black Sea Basin is the war zone. So we welcome Blaise Mistel, Vice President for Policy at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, to help us understand, first of all, where the election cycle is now, with the vote days away, and what this means immediately for the Turkish people who have been struggling with a very weak economy and very high inflation for some time. Blaise, a very good evening to you. The last time I read about the election, the polls had tightened completely. What does this mean right now for the people of Turkey struggling with inflation? Inflation that would, in other circumstances, almost guaranteed a regime change. Good evening to you.
John, good evening. It's always a pleasure to be with you and Malcolm. Indeed, we've seen Turkey suffer through multiple crises in the last 6 months leading up to these elections that will be held on Sunday, May 14th, from relentless inflation that has caused widespread economic pain to everyday Turks, to the horrible earthquake that shook Turkey earlier this year, causing mass death and devastation, and highlighting the corruptness at the heart of the Erdogan regime that allowed developers to build buildings that were clearly not meeting the anti-earthquake regulations. So there's been a lot of very good reasons Turks have had to reject this regime, and in fact, we're seeing what really has been the case for almost the last 20 years, which is that Turkey is evenly split between those who support Erdogan, apparently no matter what, and those that oppose him. And so we see that his challenger Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, who is the head of one of the major opposition parties, but is running as a joint candidate representing six different parties who have come together in coalition to oppose Erdogan. He's been running neck and neck with Erdogan, but just in the past couple of days, we've seen him edge ahead of him ever so slightly. The last poll I saw had Kılıçdaroğlu at 47% compared to 44% for Erdogan. And what this has resulted in is seeing Erdogan try every trick in the book, both the honey and the vinegar, to get people to vote for him. So the honey has been suddenly the official government statistics are showing that this inflation, which has been sky high, reaching 70 or 80%, is now miraculously disappearing, or at least growing smaller. It dipped below 50% for the first time in a year. All of a sudden this week. And the vinegar is just very nasty threats. We've seen his interior minister refer to the elections as a coup attempt by the West. And Erdogan himself said, quote, "My nation will not allow this government to fall," which is a not so veiled threat about what might happen. And of course, it also raises the possibility that Erdogan will not allow himself to lose. We know that he has meddled in past elections. He has almost a complete grip on the media, broadcasting his messages and not his opponent's messages. And he has the ability somewhat to manipulate the vote. And given how close it is, I think the question is not, does he win or lose the election, but does he allow himself to lose the election? And he's clearly signaling that he will not.
Malcolm?
To take advantage of your work in strategic competition in the region, the announcement that the A-10 Warthogs are going to be outfitted with bunker buster bombs, I think 16 to the planes that were being phased out and are now getting a new life. What is the significance now? Was the message to the Iranians, to our other allies in the region, and the addition of the USS Florida to the Fifth Fleet, how does that work with, together with the inclusion of the Warthogs now with the bunker buster bombs?
Yeah, so clearly this is an attempt to signal to the Iranians that the U.S. is increasing its weapons and its capabilities in the region. But capabilities have to be matched by will. And I think as far as the Iranians are concerned, they're going to see this as so much bluster and not really adding up to much of a threat. Because if you look at what the U.S. has actually done in the region when confronted by repeated Iranian-backed attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria, it adds up to butt kiss. We've been tracking this at JINSA in the slightly more than 2 years that President Biden has been in office since January of 2021. There have been over 80 attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria that are linked to Iranian proxies. There have been four times that the United States has retaliated for those attacks. So it's nice to have bunker busters on A-10s, but if those bunker busters aren't actually dropped in Iranian bunkers, then they're not really doing a whole lot of good in terms of deterring Iranian aggression. And in fact, we're seeing the Iranians call the American bluff just this week. In the last week, they've taken two American oil tankers hostage, seized them in the waters around the Persian Gulf, very clearly indicating that they are undeterred and that they're going to show that American attempts to signal a more muscular posture don't add up to much of anything at all. The other interesting thing about the bunker busters on the A-10s is that they're also a reflection of a very intense bureaucratic and political battle here in Washington about whether the A-10s should be retired or kept in service. The Air Force desperately wants to get rid of them because they're not particularly useful when it comes to fighting China, which is what the military is focused on these days. They're at least four decades old, if not older, and very hard to keep in service. But there are a lot of members of Congress who are fans of the A-10, if for no other reason that they are based in their districts, and so Congress keeps keeping them in service, and so finding some way to use them is also how we've ended up with these bunker busters that aren't actually getting dropped on Iranian bunkers.
Blaise, we have a couple of minutes. Since the withdrawal from Afghanistan in August of 21, there has been an opinion that the U.S. is leaving the region. Is that accurate, and does that contribute to the disorder?
Well, I'd say, first of all, that perception is reality. And when you have multiple senior officials from multiple administrations, I mean, this goes back to President Obama and Hillary Clinton's famous article in Foreign Affairs about the pivot to Asia, talking about how we want to be out of the Middle East, how the Middle East is a source of nothing good for the United States, and how the center of gravity of U.S. National interests and foreign policy is shifting eastward into the Indo-Pacific, then that leaves the impression in the minds of our partners and allies in the region that we are leaving. And certainly that is reinforced by very clear actions, such as the precipitous withdrawal from Afghanistan, further reinforced by our inability to help even our own citizens get out of Sudan, unwillingness to help them, And so I think it's little surprise that with that perception, you're seeing our partners hedge their bets and turn to other sources of potential economic partnership or military security.
We have about a minute, Malcolm. Go ahead.
If he wins the election, do you think Erdogan will move to withdraw from Syria or step up the activities against the Kurds to rally the domestic population?
Yeah, I think the engagement in Syria is for the long term for three reasons. A, I think Erdogan believes in a greater Turkey that includes territory in Syria. B, as you said, targeting the Kurds is an ideological centerstone of his political alliance. And C, one of the biggest thorns in his side politically is the 5 million Syrian refugees in Turkey, and he needs to make space for them to be able to return to Syria someday.
30 seconds, Blaze. Do you believe at this point that the Assad regime is coming in from the cold?
It is, and it's very clearly a result of what we were just talking about, right? The perception and reality of American withdrawal.
Blaze Mistel, Vice President at the Jewish Institute for National Security of America, Malcolm Hoenlein, Conference of Presidents, Major American Jewish Organizations. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.